All right, guys, let's talk about Jägermeister. They could have written a totally normal ad here, like a really classic ad. They could have talked about their history, the 56 botanicals. It could have been all salesy and cutesy, but they know you don't care. Jägermeister doesn't want to be like all those other ads you've seen and heard. They just wanted to say two things. Jägermeister is great, but everyone has been drinking it wrong. Damn, that's cold.
Drinking it wrong? All right, if that's the case, how should we be drinking it?
They are so glad you asked, and so am I, Dad. I'm here to help you. Ice cold is the answer, at 0 degrees Fahrenheit to be exact. Ice cold shots of Jägermeister. That's it. That's all they want to tell you. So, wherever you are, if you're hanging out with friends or at the bar, call the shots. Cheers with ice cold shots of Jägermeister. Damn, that's cold. And remember to check out Jägermeister at www.draftkingsxjagermeister.com. Remember, drink responsibly. Jägermeister liqueur, 35% alcohol by volume, imported by Mast Jägermeister US, White Plains, New York. Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf, synchronized swimming, tailgates before a college football game, late night karaoke, especially late night karaoke. There is nothing better than a duet of summer love, and I can assure you that. But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Gojo and Golic. Mike Golic Jr., Mike Golic Sr., Claudia Bellafato in the DraftKings studio in Boston. We got a great show for you guys today. As always, make sure you download, subscribe, rate, review us. Leave us a 5-star rating and check us out here live Monday through Friday from 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern. And, of course, the best of Gojo and Golic on noon to 1 p.m. Eastern, wherever you get VSiN on the radio. Claudia, what do we got coming up today?
Well, if us East Coasters can stay awake for this one, we got a full slate. Of course, we'll talk about last night's game, but plenty of football. Thomas Morstead will join us live, the Jets punter, to break down the upcoming season. We'll get a Masters preview in, joined by Michael Eaves live from Augusta. And the path of win totality. Yes, we are not done talking about the solar eclipse, but we're going to get some NFL in there. But as promised, we have to talk about the fact that UConn is back-to-back champ, 75-60 win over Purdue, the first team to go back-to-back since Florida 17 years ago. Average scoring margin this tournament, over 23 points, 12 straight NCAA tournaments wins by at least 10 points dating back to last season. We sort of knew it all along, guys. It was always UConn Gojo. Let's be real.
It was what felt like the most obvious answer this entire tournament. Dad, for a team that won by an average of 20 points in last year's tournament run to a title with Dan Hurley wearing the same underwear that he's wearing in this tournament, and now this year, 23 points per game margin of victory for what has to be, and Dan Hurley has said it himself, the most dominant two-year run in men's college basketball history. And I think any time, Dad, you're compared to the UCLA teams in the John Wooden era, it's kind of like Wilt Chamberlain stat in the NBA, you know you're in rarefied air and you're doing something right, and UConn's found their way back into that place.
Yeah, you're right. Getting mentioned with John Wooden and UCLA, because those are eras that will never happen again. I believe Wooden and UCLA won 7 straight at one point. So that's not going to happen anymore. So you're right. When you can be in that same breath in other conversations with what your team has done and what UConn has done overall, which we'll get into, is fascinating. But it's such a complete team, right? They're just, you never felt like they were getting challenged. It was, 36-30 at halftime, and it didn't even feel that close because UConn said, okay, we'll cover our big man against your big man. Let Zach Edey go off, which he did for 37 points in this one, getting the ball down low. We'll just cover the perimeter. We're not gonna let you bomb from the outside. They took just 7 threes. They've been averaging 15 threes a game or something like that. They took just seven and made just one. So UConn has the strategy, but, Claudia, they have the ability and the players to go ahead and carry that strategy out.
Well, they're deeper. I think that's what it came down to. Yesterday, I walked into my apartment complex, and the mailman asked me, he goes, who do you have tonight? And at the time, I really hadn't placed a bet, and I said, you know what? The issue is Purdue just only has one guy. They only have Edie, and you saw that. He put up 37. The other contributions, 12, 5, 4, and 2. And that's what I said. I said, that's why UConn is going to win. Yes, they're more talented overall, but they have more guys that can shoot and score, and I think that's what it came down to, Gojo.
Eerily reminiscent of the conversation we had on the women's side about South Carolina versus Iowa and the difference between those two teams. And that manifests itself in a 37-0 discrepancy in bench points in that game. But you're right. For UConn, it's both the depth and also I just think the makeup of the team. We talked yesterday about Dan Hurley's assessment of building a championship squad like this in the transfer portal era. And the fact that you did have some mix of that in addition to Stephon Castle, a star freshman for you. Donovan Klingon, obviously a sophomore and NBA hopeful, a guy that we expect to probably be a part of the draft this year, but seniors like Tristan Newton, who goes back to back as being the best player in the championship game for this team, they had a little bit of something for everybody in terms of the style, the experience level on this team, and it got them to the point, Dad, where I mentioned that comparison with UCLA. UConn became the third team to win multiple title games by 15 plus points and just the second team to do it in consecutive years, joining UCLA from 1967 to 69, according to ESPN stats and info. That's uncommon. This is all uncommon for UConn, and the fact that they made it look so easy and ho-hum, Dad, where we never felt like they were threatened, even when Purdue had them in single digits, or even when in the semifinal Alabama challenged them and got it to single digits, it never felt like it was in, you know, at risk of being anything other than an eventual UConn win where they just outlast these teams.
Well, yeah, and each game can be different, and what I think what Claudia said really sums it up. I never feel like they could get back in the game. They have anybody else scoring. One other player in double digits. I mean, that's basically what UConn said. We're going to let your guy go off and Zach Edey, and we're going to stop everybody else. So that was their game plan, and it worked to perfection. I mean, and you said it before, but let's continue to give some love to Tristan Newton. You mentioned it. Back-to-back years last year against San Diego State, 19-10-4. This year, 25-7. I mean, he's of a great team. He's the man. He's kind of that trigger man. He's the guy that it all kind of runs through. But they're so fundamentally sound, Mike. I can't say that enough, and it sounds so unsexy. But they just are. You know, and that's from Dan Hurley and what he teaches and that coaching family with his brother Bob coaching over at Arizona State and the dad and what he has done. I mean, this is a fundamental family, and that's what they teach and that's what they coach, and they get the players. Now, there was a little bit of a quiet spot for UConn, you know, when Jim Calhoun left, but, you know, they rose back up a bit then and now we're back up again. So, they are back doing what they do. It's just amazing because, Mike, we lived there for how many years that Storrs, Connecticut just produced so many championship teams out of that little area from around the country.
I mean, you can make the argument that UConn's run in the 21st century is the most impressive run in sports, considering they have won titles across multiple coaches in an era that's not supposed to support that, in a place that, as you said, and I kept saying this to people last night, because there aren't a lot of people from Connecticut that live out here, so I feel like I need to spread the gospel for everyone. You go to Storrs, Connecticut, it's cow pies. It smells like manure there. It's a very yep. rural area. It's not a gorgeous campus by any means, and it's not a place that you think should be able to sustain everything it has, but men's and women's college basketball, it has been the dominant force of this time over that time period and won all six of its national championships across three coaches in a way that just does not feel like the norm in an area where, yes, we've talked about, we've seen the UCLA's go on runs like that. Billy Donovan, as Dan Hurley pointed out, won with a Florida team that basically returned everybody. This UConn team, we talked about it with South Carolina. Hockey line changed a right. bunch of guys into this team that were in more important roles than they were last year. And so Dan Hurley, who is also an interesting, charismatic character at the center yeah. of all of this, I feel like is a lot more giving of emotion and himself than most coaches are currently, stepped to the microphone to say the obvious again last night after this game.
to share the court with Matt Painter and Purdue, one of the top programs in the country, one of the best coaches in the country, and just total class, class personified across the board with those guys. So, obviously, what could you say? We won by a lot again.
He can't help himself. He cannot help himself when he gets the opportunity to troll or throw a joke in there. That's what this dude does. I was dying laughing last night, Dad. Zach Edey sets a hard screen, I think, towards the end of the first half of this game. And you see Dan Hurley walking out, kind of saying something to him in the midst of that game. Like, he really is as bold and brash as I can remember, especially a coach that I kind of associate being on the younger side in quite some time.
Yeah, he gets out on the court when he's allowed to, and sometimes when he's not allowed to make his point. Like I said, I love his coaching style, and much like South Carolina, when you get a team that's that good, and you have younger players, some of the younger players who aren't maybe playing as much, to keep them there, right? And just what Dawn Staley did in South Carolina, she gets the ladies to come back, and not hit the portal. I know they brought in, they had at least one of their top players who had brought in. It's going to happen. But for the most part, if you can keep your players and the players see the winning and see the development, they're less apt to have as much movement on teams like those than you are other teams.
And so it creates the possibility of the word, and I feel like the meme, the Kansas City Chiefs, the UConn Huskies, teams openly talking about three-peating, Claudia, because that's what UConn's in line to do right now, according to a lot of the sports books, and certainly according to their head coach, Dan Hurley.
Yeah, and you mentioned it earlier, back-to-back titles. They would be the first since the NCAA expanded in 1985. Senior, you mentioned this one. You were right. Seven straight titles under John Wooden. That was the only team to three-peat in 67, 73. And Dan Hurley talked about sort of being in that group, what that means.
I think it's up there in terms of the greatest two-year runs that a program's maybe ever had, just because of everything we lost from last year's team. To lose that much, and again, to do what we did again, it's got to be as impressive a two-year run as a program's had since prior to whoever did it before Duke. To me, it is more impressive than what Florida and Duke did. Because they brought back their entire teams, and we lost some major players.
They did, and they revamped, and they were very successful. He mentioned Duke. Duke is actually the favorite to win it all next year, 10-1. UConn right behind them at 12-1. Somebody asked Hurley after the game too, what do you think about that Kentucky job? Maybe will you take that over? And he just laughed, guys, because why would you? After what you did the last 2 years, why would that even be a thought, Gojo?
I completely agree. To go down now at the current state of Kentucky, where the expectations are going to be otherworldly, where the resources are no doubt great, and you're a blue blood program, a tradition rich one in college basketball, we had this conversation last year around this Huskies team. That's a blue blood, Dad, in college basketball. UConn is the modern blue blood in the sport, and Dan Hurley is at the helm of a winning Death Star right now with no reason to go and court the kind of other chaos that comes with taking a job like Kentucky, especially coming off John Calipari, where they just ran a dude out of town who had the number one class in basketball and has had a top five class each of the last 6 years, had him in the Final Four every other year. We're getting to a point now where that stuff matters, I think, less and less when you can create the kind of circumstances and really, benefit from the circumstance that Jim Calhoun laid there at Connecticut that's now benefiting Kevin Ollie and now Dan Hurley.
Financially keep him right up there where he should be, right? I mean, that's UConn's only job right now is to don't do anything that would screw that part of it up. Keep him happy financially, which they should for what he's done. Because other teams would at least try to throw some money at him. It was interesting, as Claudia mentioned, Duke's the favorite last year. Well, they had the number one class. I watched some of the McDonald's All-American game. The number one player in the country, this forward, this Cooper Flagg, brought the ball up at times as well. Yeah. He is amazing. But they have an incredible – it's almost like the Kentucky thing, where they're bringing in, they have five early signees. They're like top players. And you wonder how many of them are going to be one and dones. But they really loaded up. It looks Kentucky-esque for the players they're bringing in. It'll be interesting how many of them are on the court, you know, to start out the season.
Yeah, and I think that kind of speaks to another interesting point around college basketball, because Cal leaving Kentucky kind of feels like another one of those moments we've talked about a lot in college football, how people have been pointing to coaching departures and older coaches deciding to retire in that sport because of all the changes that are involved in the new version of the sport. And I think Cal leaving Kentucky feels like a big thing there. And looking around the landscape of the sport right now, where we're watching Jay Wright commentate on the tournament, where you're looking at Dan Hurley as kind of the new face of coaching in college basketball, and just kind of the state of things, Dad. I shout out to David Hellman, who I was watching the game with last night from Fox Sports, pointed out that UConn's won all six of their national championships since the last time we had a Pac-12 team in Arizona win in 1997. They've won five of their six since the last time a Big Ten team has won the title in Michigan State in 2000. And it made me think, like, Tom Izzo, probably the last of the true figurehead coaches that we've got in college basketball, right? And a guy who has sort of found himself in that Mike Tomlin range of, well, you know you're going to be competitive every year. When they get around the tournament, we all kind of expect, hey, they'll be competitive, they'll be a tough out, but we've kind of not broached anything remotely close to winning a championship in what feels like long enough to wonder if we can even expect that to happen anymore.
You know, from the Big Ten side, you mentioned the last Big Ten title, 2000, Michigan State. It's now 24 years. That's 24 years since the Big Ten has won a title. They've had eight chances, and they're 0-8 in those chances, so they can't close the deal with Purdue and Zach Edey, your two-time National Player of the Year. You know, this was kind of his moment to, you know, Purdue hadn't been there in so long. This was kind of his moment to be the man the last couple of years, much like Caitlin Clark in being, you know, who she was the last couple of years and setting all the records this year, not trying to close out their careers with titles, right? It's the only thing escaping both of them. Caitlin, obviously, with the better numbers overall in, you know, from her side of it, but Edey's still considered the best player, you know, the Naismith winner, the player of the year the last couple of years. Neither one able to close out that deal and get that national championship. So tough way for them to end. Great individual stuff, but, you know, you want that team thing. Anybody who's been in a team sport, man, it's to win that championship, that's obviously got to be it.
And again, we always talk about winning it in this sport in particular, tough and chaotic, single elimination, massive tournament of this side, hardly ever rewards the best team. I've always said March Madness is a fun model for picking a champion. It's something that we all love watching as viewers. It's a very poor model for finding the best team in college basketball or in general, when you don't have a series-based sport in one that requires as much volume as basketball, hockey, and some of these other sports do. You're kind of forsaking picking the best champion for picking the funnest champion. And yeah, funnest is a word. And so for UConn to do what they've done in back-to-back years, especially this year, where they've been largely viewed as the best team in the sport and going into the tournament were the one seed, to go and capture that is insane. And then to peel back the layer even more and look at what UConn's done overall, men's and women's, in the 21st century. I mean, Dad, you've got 2 years in 2004 and 2014 where the men and women won both titles. You can barely go more than a four-year stretch without one of those two programs winning a title in store. And again, I'll keep going back to the UConn men's program has done this now through Jim Calhoun, Kevin Ollie notching one, and Dan Hurley notching two championships in this time since 1999. And I don't feel like we see that happen in a lot of places where someone's able to come in and seem the only thing that registers in that same way, Dad, is probably like LSU or Ohio State football. And really, I would lean more towards LSU in that, where you look at the last three coaches have all won a national championship during that time period. And so it's kind of a recognition that this is a really difficult thing to do, because, again, you think of LSU then, they're in a talent-rich area. They're in the Southeast. They're in Louisiana. That's got all these great homegrown athletes. Again, growing up in Connecticut, Donovan Clingan is the outlier. Having a homegrown native son from Connecticut come and be one of the stars of your team ain't something that happens very often. So I know we've been talking about men's college basketball kind of searching for something to sink our teeth into. I do think there needs to be a recognition that what UConn has done just simply should not exist, and the fact that it does is incredible.
Yeah, and Hurley at this, you know, is making the case that he's not going anywhere. His quotes are amazing. Did you see the quote about the possibility of going to Kentucky? I mean, just amazing. He said about going to Kentucky, and he brings in his wife, who's from New Jersey. He said, oh, my God, Kentucky or anywhere that's going to take her further from New Jersey? I mean, we just went to Rhode Island, which I had to drag her then to Connecticut to get her closer and now further. He said, I can't afford a divorce right now. I just started making money. I mean, dude is unbelievable. But he said, he goes, think about what we can do here. Just all everything they've done. Now winning three in a row. He basically said, it's like a dynasty in modern times. He said, that's what I'm thinking about. And he's right. Just like we're talking about it with the Chiefs, we'll be talking about it with UConn.
Now Dan Hurley just needs to go out and buy a different pair of underwear. Like, that's the that's the only thing that didn't pass the vibe check. And I understand, like, as a former sports guy, deeply sportsy. We talked about it. I had the same undershirt that I wore to practice every day during my senior season when we went undefeated. I understand being superstitious to an extent here, but I cannot imagine, even with his wife, and for anyone that missed it, I think it was Tracy Wolfson told this story during the tournament, that Dan Hurley wore the same pair of Red Dragon underwear from last year's NCAA tournament that they won in this year's tournament, and his wife bought a portable washer to hand wash these things or whatever by themselves here. I still, with all that care, Dad, can't imagine those underpants are in good condition. I can't. I just won't.
No, no. Buy a new pair. Time, new season, new pair. That's what you got to do.
New season, new pair. We at least need to get eyes on the old pair to pay homage to it. Congratulations to the UConn Huskies, your 2024 men's March Madness champions on the men's side. Hey, Dad, what do you do when you're out with friends? The waiter comes up and tries to take everybody's order, but the whole table freezes up and everyone's looking at each other trying to find some help.
That's a great question. So what should I do?
You should have some confidence, Dad, or as our friends at Jägermeister call it, shotfidence. If everyone's having trouble ordering, here's what you do. You take charge, you grab the bull by the horns, you find that dog in you, and you make an executive decision. And just order for the table, a round of ice-cold Jägermeister shots. Damn, that's cold. Because apparently, we've all been drinking Jägermeister wrong.
Did not know that. How should we be drinking it?
Glad you asked, Dad. We should be drinking it ice-cold at 0 degrees Fahrenheit.
Well, that brings up other things that I love ice cold as well. And I'll tell you right out of the gate, that's going to be a candy bar pulled out of the freezer. That's my way of eating candy.
Oh, I love it. On the golf course out there, you get to the turn in the middle of the round there, and you get to that little clubhouse there, and they've always got the candy bar options, and I always see they've usually got a little box of them in the freezer, and it always makes it better on a hot day out on the golf course, taking a bite of that cold, cold chocolate and getting ready to go for the rest of my round. It's the same way with Jägermeister. So wherever you are, if you're hanging out with friends at the bar, call the shots. Cheers with ice-cold shots of Jägermeister. Damn, that's cold.
And remember to check out Jägermeister at www.draftkingsxjägermeister.com. Remember, drink responsibly. Jägermeister liqueur, 35% alcohol by volume, imported by Mast Jägermeister U.S., White Plains, New York.
Who will be the UConn of fast food? Well, the power is in your hands, and you have an hour left to vote. It's the one seed, McDonald's fries, up against the three seed, Chick-fil-A spicy chicken sandwich. McDonald's fries right now, 58.3%. Hannah, very smart, she comments, I really want to vote spicy chicken Sammy over the fries just out of spite, but I'm like Claudia and don't care for spicy things, so it wouldn't make sense. And then if you go down, people are saying you got to talk about, you know, the fries without the sauce, chicken is flat and bland, blah, blah, blah. People are really weighing in on this one, guys, but it does look like fries may run away with it unless in this hour left, people run towards the spicy chicken Sammy. We'll see.
Yeah, we got just under 2,000 votes in right now at Gojo and Golic on Twitter. If you want to try and swing the balance at this point, Dad, but McDonald's fries, run from it, dread it. Destiny arrives all the same, and they appear poised to take this thing.
And I get it about the sauce. I particularly don't use sauce on the spicy chicken sandwich from Chick-fil-A. I enjoy it without the sauce. I really do. But your point is, Claudia's point is a lot of people do use the sauce. And with the fries, now a lot of people use ketchup, but you don't really have to with the McDonald's fries. So I could see that be the deciding factor. I voted spicy chicken. It's going to have a tough time with an hour left to make a comeback here. It's going to be very, very difficult for them to do. And at this rate, the blue blood is going to reign supreme. We will see.
Me and Claudia both made the same face when we realized you've been eating dry chicken sandwiches out here. A little worried about
you're
you.
You're just out here raw.
It's good. You mean do you mean every piece of chicken you've ever eaten has needed some sort of condiment on it?
1,000%.
Really?
Everything
you know
I
what?
Eat.
Then
you're getting it some chicken.
But the issue is, like, the bread makes it dry, and because it's breaded, it's extra dry. So that actually blows my mind that you don't put sauce on it. You need to change
that.
Well, and
Dad, to your point about the quality of chicken, like, if you've grilled a nice piece of chicken or made it at home or something, or get it at a restaurant where you know, okay, it's prepared with a little TLC, this is all fast food chicken. And I understand we've talked about Chick-fil-A having different standards in there, a militant approach to customer service that's clearly leaked into the voting here. It's still fast food chicken, which means every once in a while it's going to have a touch of the dries here, and that's where the special sauce comes into play. And so you dabble in the sauce sometimes, or you always just out here raw smacking this chicken?
Every now and then, I don't feel like McDonald's salts their fries enough, and I need ketchup on them. You know, the fries aren't made perfectly every time, just like the chicken spicy sometimes you said is dry. There are times I've had the McDonald's fry and I haven't liked them. You know, I didn't like the way they were prepared, so I needed ketchup on them. So I could say the same thing there.
Oh, that wasn't my issue, though. I love dipping stuff in ketchup. I think ketchup, properly rated condiment, that it's fantastic. It pairs with a lot of things. I have some misgivings with the crowd like Mahomes that puts it on steaks. But when it comes to fries, no, I like to get copious amounts in there. Now, McDonald's fries also have the distinction of being something you can eat without any of it, especially when you get the good golden brown ones in there. But you just made it sound like you were never dipping into the sauce of the chicken sandwich, and that worried us a little bit.
No. I dip sometimes just because I love the taste of that sauce. There's no doubt about it. One of the great things about fries is when you get the bag, if you go drive-through and you get the bag in the car, a lot of times you don't want to eat your sandwich in the car. Not us. We eat our sandwiches in the car. But you can reach in and pick out and eat fries while you're driving. Uh-huh. You know, it's the good snack while you're going. You don't have to wait on those.
And then
it's
your
the
car
most
smells
humbling
like
thing
McDonald's
when you then get
for
home.
4 hours. What do you think? So true.
I say it's the most humbling thing when you get home at the end and realize how many of the fries you've actually eaten by doing that one at a time trick that you think is helping you be judicious with them.
The one thing I and your mother have had to do for a while, that was the biggest thing to get out of the car when you and your brother Jake, who are, again, 15 months apart, were in that toddler stage in the back seat, and we'd go through and get McDonald's. We would always hand you guys the fries because they were a very easy snack to eat. And inevitably, the mess you guys made was mostly, it was McDonald's fries we had to pick up off the floor. So thank McDonald's for that as well.
Shout out to a bag of French fries where you can see the grease stains steeping in on the outside where the bag starts to sweat a little bit. That's one of the sexiest sights in fast food when you see that bad boy just leaking out all over the place. God, I'm getting hungry just thinking about it. Claudia, let's pivot a little bit here and do a little bit more basketball because we were all waiting to see the number that came from the game on Sunday involving the Iowa and South Carolina women. And good Lord in heaven, it did not disappoint.
And just for the record, you just made me lose my appetite. But yes, they did set a record, 18.7 million on ABC and ESPN. Clark weighed in on the number, and she kept it very simple. She tweeted out, 18.7 million, fire emoji. Yeah, we all have to agree. The most watched basketball game since 2019, when the men's title game between Virginia and Texas Tech averaged 19.6 million. But the only sporting event in the U.S. to draw a bigger TV audience than this game since 2019, football, the World Cup, and the Olympics. And to be quite honest, with a mix of the timing and also the fact that we didn't really think it was going to be too close of a game last night, I wouldn't be surprised if the women's numbers did better than the men's last night. Senior, am I crazy to think that?
No, because last year the number for the women's was a little over 9 million and the men's was, I think, 14 million. Now, again, I get confused at times. This is ABC and ESPN combined, right? Mm-hmm. So because obviously it was on both. So that's the number that we're looking at. I think it's going to outrate the men's. That was the talk. Was it going to be able to this year? I don't see the men's, Mike, being over 18.7.
No, and it's one of those things where it's kind of a good measuring stick thing, but it doesn't need to be. And I don't think any of us are trying to make it comparative in a way that derives its greatness from that. It's just we know what the conversation has been before. And so the fact that it's staring eye to eye with all the things that Claudia just mentioned now, you look at the national title game, up 89% from last year when Iowa lost to LSU, up 285%. Over the viewership from South Carolina's last national championship 2 years ago when they beat UConn. Like, this is a certified rocket ship right now for the women's game over the last couple of seasons. And yes, I understand some of this is certainly attributed to Caitlin Clark herself and the sort of mania that followed her. It was very Steph Curry-esque in the way that she became this one-woman barnstorming show. But I think we've seen there's proof of concept around the sport now with all of these ratings and the numbers over the tournament, Dad, that even if it takes a slight dip because you're losing a generational player, it's still an insanely popular game that's only getting more shine, more platform and better coverage that's going to lead to more people watching.
Yeah, and you're right. We're not making the comparison to say, oh, is one better than the other? We're making the comparison to say how much growth the women's game has made over the last few years. That's the key issue here. So it's been impressive. One thing that definitely hurts the men's game, I mean, the women's game was on in the middle of the afternoon, you know, East Coast time on Sunday. The men's game doesn't start till almost 9:30. Eastern time, and UConn is in the Eastern time zone. So it's a crusher. It just is. We're, Mike, you and I are fortunate enough to be out in the West. So, you know, that game started at 6 o'clock our time. You're able to stay up and watch it. Claudia, you're out in Boston. As I said, UConn is in Connecticut, obviously. So that's on Eastern time. I mean, it's difficult. You're a fan. You want to stay awake. But, you know, if you're more a casual fan tuning in, you know, you may get tired and say, I'll read about it in the morning, Claudia. I would have. Claudia, did you make it through the game?
Well, am I allowed to lie on here? Because I feel like it's wrong if I say I didn't. But I felt secure in the fact that UConn was going to run away with it. So, you know, I watched a little. Claudia. I had to be up at 4:30 in the morning. So, no. But I watched
I think that's what people
I think that's experience, but to though, the point, is representative point, of a lot of people on the East Coast who have all had to get up early for something. And this has been the story of the entire tournament on both sides. The fact that we've got these games going on in the middle of the night, especially as we've gotten later and there have been fewer games and we're still stacking them this late in the night where you've got 9:20 and 10 o'clock Eastern tip-offs. It's just insane. I don't know how we get this changed or which congressman we have to write. I know they should be busy with real stuff. They always seem to meddle in sports anyway. And so if we can get them to help us out with this one thing, it's not quite Dad's daylight savings time reform. But man, for sports fans, it might be just as impactful right now. We need to get these damn tournament games on earlier, and we need to do it fast because you see how well it worked out for the women. Use them as the example. Follow them to freedom. It's Kentucky Derby time. Are you ready for the greatest 2 minutes in sports? Saddle up with DK Horse, an official DraftKings affiliate. Right now, new customers who download the DK Horse app can get a 100% deposit bonus up to $250. Just deposit $25 or more and complete the playthrough requirement. Download DK Horse now to join the Run for the Roses action. New customers can get a 100% deposit bonus up to $250 when they opt in with code GOLIC, only on the DK Horse app. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER, 18 plus, 21 plus in certain states to open or access an account and a resident of a state where DK Horse is available. Eligibility restrictions apply, void where prohibited. See terms at dkhorse.com. One per new customer, match calculated on first deposit up to a maximum of $250. Deposit requires two-time playthrough of settled wagers within 168 hours. Bonus released in $25 increments. Deposit and eligibility restrictions apply. See terms at dkhorse.com. Welcome back to Gojo and Golic. Dad, we didn't get to talk about this yesterday, but on the heels of the ratings discussion around women's college basketball, the you know, overwhelming popularity it's absorbing right now, there was one little moment, and it kind of was the undercurrent of some of the end of this tournament run for Caitlin Clark and her storied career, is we all devolved into this GOAT debate about if she can be considered one of the greats to ever play the game without a championship. And a lot of that was, you know, online discourse, but then you had Diana Taurasi, who went on with Scott Van Pelt. Her and Sue Bird had been doing the simulcast on ESPN during a lot of these Final Four and championship games. And she had the quote, reality is coming, and talked about the transition that Caitlin's getting ready to make to the next level. Also said that if she was taking the number one overall pick, that she would take Paige Beckers over Caitlin Clark. And I just wondered if you were a little bit surprised at all, Dad, about the pushback that we saw on Caitlin Clark by some of those inside the game as we got towards the end of this run.
I'm surprised at Dinah Taurasi and her comments that, yeah, you know, what she can do against 18-year-olds now, you know, the Lee, paraphrasing, saying what she's doing. She did say 18-year-olds against 18-year-olds as opposed to the WNBA. Last I checked, Diana, you played against 18-year-olds as well when you were in college, and 19-year-olds and 20-year-olds and 21-year-olds and some 22-year-olds. She did the exact same thing that you did. Claudia, what's up with the sisterhood out here of lifting each other up? I mean, it's like some of these women can't wait to tear each other down before they go to the next level.
Senior, I was just about to say the same thing, and it's not even like, oh, woman supporting women, but it's just, there's no reason. Like, what benefit does that give her to sort of tear Caitlin Clark down? I think it's okay to put a blanket statement over the fact that it's going to be tough to make that transition, as it is for any league, man or woman, from college to the pros. But to say her specifically, well, oh, she's going to be in trouble, and Paige Beckers, is, I take her over number one. Like, I do not understand this. She set a record for men's and women's, the most points. Like, you can't deny the number. She held her team. She didn't have much help. So when I heard this, and we've been hearing it from other big voices, right? We talked about how important it was to hear from Dawn Staley supporting Caitlin Clark. To hear the opposite from other big names is really, really disappointing.
And I think this is something that, you know, not to gender it too much, because this is men's basketball culture, is the old veterans or the old guard players tearing down current players. It's one thing I hear constantly from basketball media is, hey, it's so strange to have a sport where the older stars seem to go out of their way to try and undercut the current product. And I heard the point made on the Dominique Foxworth show yesterday with Dominique and Charlie, his producer, talking about maybe trying to avoid the pitfalls that other leagues have fallen into. Like, does this have to be the way? As we're getting ready to experience, I think, a period of rapid growth for the women's game right now, we've seen and talked about how Caitlin Clark sort of represents the same juncture, at least you could kind of make the sort of comparison, to what Bird and Magic did for the NBA as a TV product back in the day, when that rivalry sort of spawned a league that was on the outs as a television product to something that became massive. And this feels like a big growth point now for women's college basketball, Dad. And it's not to say she's got to be universally loved or lauded, but it is an opportunity where this is going to mean women's basketball is going to start to get more eyes, investment, and people involved in the sport. And you wonder if that's going to change the way it operates, and if we're already seeing that reflected in the commentary.
You know, I want to go back to what Claudia said, and I agree with, is if you're going to go into the pro in your sport, that means you've played that sport for a long time, and you kind of understand that it's going to be different at each level you're at, and the top level is going to be the hardest. So, you know, there are other sports where players may think that, but it's in the locker room or wherever, saying, you know, I'm not letting that rookie get one over on me or whatever. But and I guess part of it you would have to say, guys, is most of these comments are coming from former UConn players who's Caitlin's team beat, you know, to get to the final. So maybe there's a little bit of that as well. But I'm not going to lie, I've been surprised at, hey, you know, what we've done all the time, let's wait and see what they do. They know it's going to be a tough transition. Caitlin Clark hasn't been talking any. It's one thing if you go in talking like, oh, I dominated in college and I'm going to go dominate the WNBA. No, she's not smack talking. So I guess I just don't understand. Not that everybody is going to love everybody and you got to welcome everybody in. But, you know, to air that one out was definitely a little surprising to me.
I think it's one of those things, Dad, where you look, there's always been a lot of undercurrents to the Caitlin Clark conversation, right? There's been the racial undercurrent of, in a sport predominantly, you know, built by Black women, to constantly feel like there's this great white hope complex where people are looking for a young white woman to come in and celebrate in this sport. And that's not to say Caitlin Clark wasn't deserving of celebration. I'm saying that this is some of the sentiment in the conversation that seems to be behind this at certain times. But then this idea that, yes, as it's gaining popularity, we know this, it's hard to now in the current discourse, because we've got social media, because we've got so many 24-hour news cycles, to feel like we're all having the same conversation at once, right? Where if you're some of these players, if you're a veteran in the WNBA, if you're a former WNBA star, it might seem like if you're listening in certain places that Caitlin Clark is being attributed as the sole reason why women's basketball is experiencing this current right. period of growth and maybe not giving enough credit to the other stars. And when you mistake that for the main conversation and no one else getting credit, I can understand that maybe some of these feelings might creep up.
Yeah, I get that as well. But we she's the next in a line of great players we've seen in women's college basketball, right? And she'll go down in the team picture as one of the GOATs. I'm one of those in basketball. We've talked about that. I think a national championship goes a long way in GOAT status, and she doesn't have one. But she's right there, as I said, in the team picture of the best ever. And, you know, so she's just the next person that was in line that helps carry this game. Like we kept talking about, you know, Hannah Hidalgo and Juju Watkins and Madison Booker, you know, the three incredible freshmen this year, how and they will be staying in college for a few years. So we'll get to know those names. So it will keep on rolling here. So, again, she's just the next in the line, and we have no idea what she's going to do at the next level. None. Right? I mean, though it's a shooter's game now in both leagues, and she's a shooter, so the expectation is that she could do well, but we don't know. We have no idea. It's just it's a wait-and-see approach here. But I see what you're saying, Mike, you know, because the game has been growing for a while, and if everybody is just pointing to Caitlin Clark, you know, that certainly, I'm sure, the other women that came before her may feel slighted a little bit, Claudia.
But that's also not her fault. Like, that's what would be so frustrating to me. If I went out and had this historic season and this historic college career, and I'm all excited to take it to the next level, and then I have everybody around me criticizing me, thinking I'm the one saying, hey, look at me, I was great, I'm the only good player. She's not the one, and I know you guys aren't saying this, but, like, that's more media's fault than anything. That's not her fault. She just went out here and balled out.
Well, and I guess that's the thing is, like, it's never all or nothing, and that's where we get in trouble in these conversations is it might sound like to some of the current and former players in the W that it's all being attributed to Caitlin Clark when that's really not the case. There's been plenty of celebration of others along the way here, and for Caitlin Clark, it could feel like that when you're in the eye of the storm, but we've seen an overwhelming amount of support for Caitlin Clark throughout all this where she has been celebrated. At the end of the day, these are always small blips that show up, but depending on the source, it carries a lot more weight. And as she gets ready to make this transition, I'm sure it couldn't have felt good to hear that from someone as revered in the sport as Diana Taurasi, who is considered one of the all-time greats at the college yeah. and the pro level. I will say, we didn't talk about this the other day. The biggest winner, I thought, of this tournament weekend here had to be Aaliyah Boston. Because when you look at Aaliyah Boston, 22 years old, doing what she did, helped anchoring the desk with Elle Duncan and Andrea Carter and Chiney and the rest of that great crew, and did a phenomenal job, was interviewing her former head coach in Dawn Staley, got to see her team avenge the national championship loss from last year, and got to see Caitlin Clark ball out, who is more than likely going to be her new teammate with the Indiana Fever when yes. she's taken number one overall. So for Aaliyah, you really got to have your cake and eat it too this past weekend. And by the way, future in broadcasting looks very bright. For that young woman. No one has any right to be that good at 22 while they're still playing.
We have seen more and more current players get involved in the media when they're out of a tournament or in the offseason or whatever, that they want to get involved, and it's a smart thing to do. Mike, when we were finishing up at ESPN, how many current players did we get rolling through to do what they call the car wash to go on all the shows to try and get those reps while you're playing? It's a great move to do, and you were right. She did an absolutely phenomenal job.
Welcome back to Gojo and Golic, Mike Golic Jr. and Mike Golic Sr., and it is one of the most wonderful weeks of the year. It is Masters Week, and that is where we head now to get a little taste of what's getting ready to come up at Augusta. We're joined by ESPN's Michael Eaves, who's obviously doing a great job always hosting SportsCenter, but is going to be a big part of the Masters coverage. He's hosting segments down from Augusta. He'll be hosting the two-hour practice round show on Wednesday, starting at 10 a.m. on ESPN+, as well as player interviews as the weekend gets going. And Michael, where does this rank for you in sports weeks among the calendar year, getting ready to get started down at Augusta?
It is my absolute favorite. And it has been, Gojo, even before I came here, started to work for ESPN. As a kid, my dad and I bonded over golf, and I've been a golf nerd my entire life. And this is by far my favorite event. It's my favorite week. It's not my favorite sport. My favorite sport is definitely the NBA and basketball in general. But my favorite event has always been the Masters because it's a couple things. One, to me, it's always felt like the official kickoff to spring, right? I don't care where you live, whether it's in Northeast or in Kentucky where I grew up or even in California. It's the official kickoff for spring. And also for the golf season, because now the clocks have changed. And I grew up in the central time zone, right? So the coverage would go off like 5 o'clock each day. And I still had a couple hours of daylight to go in the backyard and, you know, practice my golf if I wanted to, or ride my motorcycle, or whatever I want to do. So you just have more time after to go do things. And that's why I think for a long time, this has been my favorite sports event on any sports calendar.
Before we jump into individual players, which would include Tiger, overall, we know when LIV started, there was that animosity, and Rory talked about it a lot, that kind of kept that alive. We were never sure from the player side where that was. Now the players are all talking about we need to get back together. So from last year at this time, was there some animosity? And right now, is that changed?
Oh, the animosity was real last year for sure, because that was the first time that a lot of those guys had been in the same place at the same time since the split, since the guys left. Because you had Koepka, you had Mickelson, you had Sergio, you had Patrick Reed, right? All those guys, well, three of those four guys I mentioned had won here, and that's why they were here. But a lot of those guys were also sort of the main vocal people of leaving in that regard, and especially Phil Mickelson, the part he played in it. So that animosity was real, for sure, no question. Now it's not nearly as bad as it was. It's not even close. A lot of those emotions have faded a little bit from some of the players. Not all of them. Don't get me wrong. Not all of them. But some of it has faded a little bit. And the fact now that the PGA Tour itself is trying to do business with the same group, the PIF, who funded LIV to begin with, right? So you can't be trying to take money over here and talk trash about the people who got the money first, right? So a lot of the animosity obviously has died down. It's still interesting to find out where we're going to go with it. But, yeah, it's not nearly as bad as it was last year.
So that a bit on the back burner this year. Front of mind for everybody certainly is always going to be Tiger Woods the minute he steps foot on this. How much does he change the energy down there, Michael, even in his current state, knowing physically how limited he is?
It's kind of hard to say. Like, you know, we say he doesn't move the needle, he is the needle. But he is, though, man. I'm just sorry. Like, all eyes are on him regardless of what he's doing. He just has this natural attraction that makes you want to know and see what Tiger Woods is doing. And he was the first player on the practice range yesterday, the very first one. And you could see people in the background running over to get a position just to watch him hit balls and warm up, right? And then he got on the golf course a little bit, and he always has a crowd when he plays. But it's for different reasons, though. One, because of all the past success that he's had, right? He's won here five times. Can he win six? Can he tie Jack Nicklaus? That's natural intrigue. But also, we just haven't seen him much. We haven't seen him play much golf. You know, a year ago here, he made the cut, 23 in a row, that tied the all-time record for most consecutive made cuts. But then the next day, it was cold. It was rainy that morning. It was so wet. He was limping. He looked terrible. He walked off. They stopped play after six holes, and he withdrew. And we didn't see him again, right? For a while, we didn't see him again. And then just this year, though, he played one event. His event there in Los Angeles, the Riviera, played the first round, and second round, he left after six or seven holes because he was sick. So we just haven't seen him play much golf, right? And so you have that intrigue as well. You put it all together, man, like he's by far the most watched person on the golf course, and more questions about Tiger Woods than anybody else.
Without a doubt. I mean, you just hope he makes it. You're a casual fan. You hope he makes a cut. And then, God forbid, on Sunday, he's on the first page of the leaderboard. I mean, they talk about ratings. As far as the golfers that we're looking at to win this thing, Scottie Scheffler right there. But where are we with Rory now? His last major was 24 years old. Now he's 34. Been 10 years. We thought, is he the next Tiger Woods way back when? But it's been one hell of a drought for him.
It has been. And I think there for a while, Mike, even Rory was asking himself that. Where is Rory? What about Rory right now? The last 2 years, even, you know, during a lot of that LIV controversy where he was basically the face of the PGA Tour and saying so much about it, there were times he was playing really well. Like, he played some good golf, won some good golf tournaments, won the Players a couple of years ago. But when he got here or even at the other majors, he just couldn't pull through. Now, he's got a lot of demons here, obviously, from what happened way back ago. This would be the 11th time he's had a chance to complete the career Grand Slam, and he just hadn't really come close. Except maybe 2 years ago, he kind of backdoored himself into a top two or top three on that Sunday. I don't know the answer, Mike, to be quite honest with you, and I'm not sure he does. Like, even at the Texas Open last week, he's been doing some new things with his driver and some other aspects of his game, and I think that's why he played the week before to see how that was going. But a couple rounds he didn't play well, and then he played great on Sunday, right? But you need four rounds. you gotta play well for four rounds if you're going to win a major championship, and he just hasn't been able to do it, and I'm not sure what the real answer is to why. And I know he's been searching for that answer, whether it was putting at one point, he was missing greens here, he just can't pull it together. And I don't know if this is a hard place to pull it all together. I'll just say that. Hard place to pull it all together.
So if it's a hard place to pull it all together, then we can look at some of the favorites. Scottie Scheffler, the world number one, the odds-on favorite at most places to win this. Certainly Jon Rahm coming back as the defending champion now with the LIV faction of golfers. Who should be the favorite, Michael? And then who's someone you're keeping your eye on that you think has a chance to break into that group this tournament?
Scottie Scheffler should definitely be the overwhelming favorite, and he is. I believe his odds right now are the shortest all time, except for Tiger, and maybe Tiger had two or three instances where he was a shorter favorite than Scottie Scheffler. No one in the world has played better than Scottie Scheffler over the last 6-8 months, so he should be in the position that he's in. The next best player that behind Scheffler has been Wyndham Clark, and Wyndham Clark would have two other wins if not for Scottie Scheffler. He finished second to him both Bay Hill and the Players, but we haven't had a rookie win at Augusta National since 1979. That was Fuzzy Zeller. And it's kind of weird that a U.S. Open champion is coming to Augusta as a rookie here, but that is the case for Wyndham Clark. Jon Rahm as a defending champion, and also over the course of his career, he has a lower score relative to par than any player during that span. But he hasn't played well this year on LIV. He had a good finish in the very first event down in Mexico at the beginning of the year, but since then he hasn't played well. I like Brooks Koepka just because I think he's mad he lost last year. And when Brooks plays mad or a little upset, he plays well. And I think he won the PGA Championship, Gojo, last year because he lost the Masters. I really believe that. And so if coming down Magnolia Lane triggers some of that bad feeling from last year, I think that is enough motivation for him to go out there and play really well.
All right, Michael, only about 30 seconds left. Pimento cheese, how many of those sandwiches you have? Or are you picking something else?
So I love pimento cheese. I grew up eating it. I used to eat one every day when I first got here. So I would put 10 away easily. Now, though, I only allow myself to have them on the weekend. So I only have two. I have one on Saturday and one on Sunday.
Wow, nice control. You know,
that's impressive self-control there. That's growth, and we love to see that. We love to see Michael Eaves covering the Masters down in Augusta National. Check him out as a part of ESPN's coverage all week long in Augusta. Michael, thanks so much, brother. Enjoy this great week, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
No problem, guys. Good seeing you.
Thanks, Michael.
I probably need to limit myself similarly, Dad. Went to the doctor's appointment yesterday. 270 is the number on the scale. Wasn't cute. So me and Michael Eaves, maybe I need to adopt his approach to pimento cheese sandwiches with my lifestyle right now.
I imagine you got talked down a little bit there at 270. Yeah, pimento cheese big there, the egg salad, the pork barbecue, the barbecue potato chips, the cookies, all good stuff. They're all reasonably priced pretty much as well. There as well, but good control out of him. I don't think I could have that control at the Masters.
No, exactly. That's mere mortals impossible, but for Michael Eaves, a veteran of the entire situation, he goes out there and makes the impossible look easy.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.